Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Most rugby players wait until they're retired to write their memoirs or autobiographies. Andrew Porter is an exception. Fitness permitting, I think we can expect him to be part of the Irish team for at least another 5 years or so. And if he says good, I'm delighted to hear that. But he has written an absolutely brilliant autobiography, Heart on My Sleeve, My Story of Struggle and Strength. Andrew Porter, thank you so much for being with us. The book is absolutely terrific.
Thank you very much.
really couldn't get over just how open and honest you are, and also how tough you've had it, because this is one of the best books I remember reading about grief. And that's what it is really all about, isn't it? How your life has developed since your mother died when you were just 12 years of age.
Yeah. I mean, like, I suppose when the publishers came to me and approached me with the idea of writing a book, I was kind of unsure about what to write or what to say in it. I was never kind of under the impression that I was going to write a book at all, even like after I hang up the boots, but let alone while I'm playing. Like, it's, I suppose it's kind of not really the done thing, but I kind of came at it from a view that I suppose if I can kind of share my story and I suppose kind of the struggle I went through growing up, I could potentially have the possibility of helping people now in this kind of very moment, rather than waiting 5 or 10 years down the line to get my message and my story out there. So I thought it would be nearly a small bit selfish of me to kind of keep the story to, and bring it out now.
So I want to talk to you about a couple of things, such as ADHD.
Yeah.
And I want to talk to you about your eating disorder, but I would like to start by talking about your mother.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, she is so central to it. And she had been ill for, I think it was about 6 years before cancer took her away.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about your memories of her and how she's still there for you all the time.
Yeah, of course. Like, she was, I suppose she was, like, I can only really say, like, I only knew her as a child, really. Like, I never had, obviously, those kind of core memories of knowing her in my adult life. But, like, it's even, the best examples I can give is, like, even people now who knew her talk incredibly highly of her, just her personality, how outgoing and friendly she was, and how I think everyone just remembers her with, like, she was always smiling. And I suppose the positive impact she had on so many people who still tell me today, 15, 16 years after her death, like, it's incredibly powerful hearing that now, from people I don't really know, but who knew her. But I suppose the main kind of memories I have of her, we have a summer house down in British Bay. I'm sure we would have spent all of our summers down there, all, like, our any time we had off, we'd always spend down there, and it was just, like,
or on the farm down in Carlow, which is very prominent in the book as well.
Yeah, that was like my two kind of, that was when I could actually, when I wasn't getting in the way and I wasn't messing too much, and I actually had to do a bit of work when I was down on the farm. But no, like, it was just, I suppose, the happiness and the I only have good memories of her. There was never kind of an unhappy day, unless she was coming to the school and I was in trouble, and she was, I would always remember the face she'd have on her when she was coming to collect me when I was acting up in school. But no, I just, yeah, I mean, she was just an incredible incredible role model for myself and my two sisters.
What I was really taken by was that after she died, you went to the funeral in your new school uniform for a school that you were starting in the following day.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that your first time was wearing your school uniform? Was that your mother's funeral?
My school uniform, yeah, yeah, at her funeral. And I suppose it was because I probably didn't have anything else to wear, any other clobber to wear. But yeah, I was...
But then how difficult it must have been. And I know you've lots of good things to say about St. Andrews, where you went to school and great memories of it. But the first couple of years in particular were so tough for you. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, you're thrown into kind of a new environment straight after kind of a traumatic event like losing a parent. So it's, yeah, it was incredibly tough and I suppose isolating for quite some time, like where you're coming in and I only knew a handful of people from my previous school. And I suppose it was just that change of environment. It was such an isolating time where it felt like I was completely on my own and kind of so far away from everyone else. And kind of just, I was fighting my own kind of battle kind of silently. And that manifested itself in the form of an eating disorder in kind of my younger and my early stages of school.
I'd imagine for many people looking at you now as a prop forward playing for Ireland, find it hard to believe that you were a teenager who lived with an eating disorder. So tell us a little bit about that, how it happened, why it happened.
Yeah, I mean, I was always, I suppose, a big child. Like I wasn't like unhealthy or anything. I was always, I suppose, a big kid and loved sport, loved my food. But I suppose it was the loss of my mum was probably the catalyst, which kind of ate into my self-esteem and my, I suppose eroded my self-confidence in myself. And I suppose that self-image I had of myself at the time, it manifested itself in the form of an eating disorder. Where it was, I'd be in school. I remember my dad would be making me my lunches when I went to school, and sure, I would just, I'd throw them in the bin at school, and sure, like I felt like I was completely in control of everything. Like when it was the complete opposite, I was completely out of control. Like my thoughts, mindset, spiraling.
But even when he would sort of was worried and would insist that you would eat your breakfast, you'd go into the toilet and you'd deliberately get sick.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's such a, it's so kind of unbelievable now, even for me to kind of look back and be like, that was the person I was, considering kind of where I am now in my life. And I suppose how important food and like my training and that kind of routine is now. So it's so, I've come so far, I suppose, from that person, and I owe a lot of that to my family, to my dad, to my sisters, friends, my support network. But like it took me so long to realize exactly who was around me. I was just doing my own thing, so kind of inward focused on what I was doing, to not realize, I suppose, the support and the love that was around me. It was, yeah, like, and I suppose it's like anything, you don't really realize until you're kind of in at rock bottom, or at that kind of that really, really dark place where it's kind of like that wake up and just be like, you see the people around you. I suppose how what I was doing, how that was affecting my family, and I was so unaware of, I suppose, what they were going through. Like my dad losing his wife, my sisters losing their mother. It didn't take me until, I suppose, till I was in kind of the depths of it, to, I suppose, realize that. And so I suppose it was my family who I wanted to pull myself back and I suppose get better for it. But they were the ones who were constantly around me.
You also write, and I suppose we have to be conscious and careful of people who are listening to this as well. You write about suicidal ideation. And one time when you, as a teenager, seriously considered ending your own life, but it was what the love of your father and your sisters and how they would react, which sort of pulled you back from the possibility.
Yeah, I mean, it was through those really tough years that you were, that I was just, it was that kind of point where you'd be, oh, this would be a lot easier if I wasn't here. And it's complete opposite. It's complete opposite. That would just, like, it would tear them up even more from what was already going on. So it was just, and it's scary kind of looking back where you're in that kind of mindset where you're thinking that's the best case scenario when it's absolutely not. Like, and that kind of came up in the book when I was in my doing interviews for the book, and I hadn't thought about that in years. I completely shut that off. I suppose that kind of memory was locked away until I kind of had it, and I was doing interviews for the book with Richie Sadler. And I suppose the way, he's a psychotherapist, but the way he worded it, or the way he was kind of able to break down and I suppose tap into that memory was, I suppose it was obviously tough to go through and I suppose bring up and relive that that memory. But it was an incredibly enlightening experience doing the interviews for the book, and I suppose being able to look at it with perspective now and see what I was and how I was thinking to where I've come to now.
Was there a turning point as a teenager, something that happened which sort of got you back into a positive momentum?
I suppose there's, like, it's hard to really kind of put a pin in it and be like, yeah, this was the exact moment. I think there was a multitude of things. I could probably see exactly what it was doing, how tough it was on my father, how my sisters. Also, like, I think it was a coach in school who had given me a kind of a nutrition leaflet from, like, the IRFU, which were, like, the guidelines at the time. And I'd always loved playing rugby, and I'd always had the dream of playing for Ireland and for Leinster throughout my whole life. Even through tough times, I was always huge into it.
There was something there to aim for.
There was always something there, yeah. Like, there was, I always had that passion for rugby. I suppose it was, I got given that kind of nutrition kind of leaflet, and it was kind of like, okay, that's what I need to do to if I want to become a professional rugby player, I need to change the way I see and look at food, not as something to avoid, but something that is fueling me. Because at the time I was just surviving. I was getting through each day on barely nothing. Like, I was running on empty. I would be eating nothing through the day, but it's strange, because, like, I'd always look forward to training at the end of the school day, and I even remember kind of the way I was feeling at the time. I could feel it so well. Like, I can I suppose the lightheadedness, even just going out to train, because I'd be honest,
you just didn't have enough calories in you for the energy.
Absolutely nothing. But it was my love of rugby that just got me out onto the pitch, got my boots on and got out there. But I suppose it was the biggest thing was, I suppose, my family. They were the ones who were always there for me, the ones who I thought I was completely on my own when I was going through it. And then it kind of clicked that they were the ones that I was hurting.
You mentioned a little bit earlier about your mother having to go into school when you were in primary school and you were in trouble again. What's also fascinating in the book is how you write about the late diagnosis of ADHD. And then, I suppose, almost the realization that's why so many things were the way they were for you growing up.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, like I got diagnosed about 2 years ago now, and I suppose it just puts things, it helps me understand myself a lot better. And I suppose the way I was growing up, I remember when I went in to get the diagnosis, and they were like, oh, bring in some old school reports from when you were younger. And my mum always kept my primary school kind of files and report cards and stuff, and like reading back, I always have a laugh at it, because it's always like, oh, it does not like participating, always interrupts, can't sit still, always gets up, stands up, runs around the classroom.
Sorry, did Joe Schmidt let you get away with that when he was coaching the Irish
rugby team? No, that was very much, I was putting on a very, very, very thick mask for that. Yeah, I mean, it explained things very, very well for me. Yeah, it kind of explained the way how I was always, like, I always had to work. I felt like I had to work incredibly, like, a lot harder in school to get, a satisfactory grade. And I suppose that's where it was easy for me to focus on things like my training and my nutrition, because on one side of it, it can be incredibly chaotic and disorganized. And then you have that kind of hyper-focus element where it's, you're honed in on something you're really passionate about, and you do it literally, you do it to the max, and you put yourself, you throw everything you have into it. And that's what I did with my nutrition and my training. And I suppose I didn't realize at the time because I was undiagnosed with it.
I think anyone who knows anyone with ADHD, or maybe a parent with a child with ADHD, I think will really be fascinated by what you write about as well. Just in the time that we have left, and I would love to spend much longer with you, but there's so much in the book that I think people are going to get out of it. You've had an incredibly successful career. You've won Grand Slams. You've just come back from being on a successful British and Irish Lions tour in which you played in the test team, which means you've ticked an awful lot of boxes as a player and a lot of success. But do you have a better perspective of what it means to lose, given that you would have had big disappointments in your playing career as well? And sometimes you got very upset by them and blamed yourself for the team losing when it was down to the collective rather than yourself. But do you now have, as you mature, a better sense of what loss on a sporting pitch really means?
Definitely. I think like it's obviously part and parcel with the sport, with any kind of elite level, there's always going to be a winner and a loser. But like you said, I always found it very difficult to come to terms with losing. And it got to a point where it was eating into me, and I suppose it was affecting my life outside of rugby, where it was nearly like no one could say anything to me to make me feel any better. I was just set in my ways that it was my fault, when in reality it wasn't. And it kind of led me down to go and talk to a therapist about it, because I wanted to find out more about myself and the way my mind works. So like it was really interesting, the fact that she kind of brought it back to when you have loss or trauma from when you're a child, your mind kind of clicks back into that kind of same rhythm. It's like a pattern, it kind of recognizes, and it's like the chemical reaction in your brain just equates it to that. Obviously no one died on the rugby pitch, but it was just the way my mind was, I suppose, hardwired. And it gave me great perspective and great understanding of my mind. And it just kind of led me down, I suppose, to be a really good advocate for I suppose, therapy. And not just, you don't need to be in, have experienced a huge loss or a traumatic event. It could just be to find out more about yourself. And I suppose to help you, whether that's your professional or your personal life.
And just to finish, how much more have you found out about yourself as a husband and as a parent?
Oh, Jesus. That's a constant learning experience. Like
But it does change you, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And it really, it again puts things in perspective. It makes you think, it makes me have the perspective that there's more to life than just my job. And I can find it hard to dissociate myself from my personal life and my work life. And with being a husband and a father now, it's the minute I come home, I'm in dad mode. Like it's a great way to, I suppose, disconnect from all the stresses and everything going on in every other aspect of my life. But it's incredible, and it's really special. And
it's a terrific read. Heart on my sleeve, Andrew Porter, Irish Rugby International. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks very much, Matt.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.